shoes and shoes. It's Jesus in the everyday, me and you. The good news and shoes.
This is the Jesus Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
The good news and shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
We're on the air.
We're on the air.
We're on the air. We're having a philosophical
and it's a financial discussion.
Yes,
and
a financial discussion. Absolutely. Yeah.
We were going into tithing, and we have two pastors in this. Not only one in the room now. One's hiding now. Is he still?
One is looking it up.
Is he still looking it up?
He's still looking it up.
This is Joe Martech. Those of you that listen to the show regularly, write this number down. If you're not driving in your car, write this number down. If you're driving in the car, don't write this down. 1-888-221-8990. 1-888-221-8990. That is the phone call, toll-free from any place. You can call in. We have sitting here in the office today a bevy.
Bevy? I thought she was homesick today.
That was Bueller.
We have a comical accountant.
We have a comical accountant. You know, when people say CPAs have no sense of humor, it's a warped sense of humor.
Well, whatever. It's better to have something than nothing.
Yeah. Vince Rizzino, CPA, is sitting here. And Vince Rizzino, by the way, is also a forensic CPA. I'm trying to be somewhat straight in between the humor. But also we have sitting with here a guest attorney who is a retired prosecuting attorney from Wisconsin, which is also a messy Jew.
He's a messy Jew.
I love this. Messianic, which means he was, you know, he looks like a rabbi. In a rabbi, the definition is teacher, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you could teach.
I could.
And I'm sure you have.
He is a rabbi.
I have.
And he is now a Jew for Jesus, been converted. How long have you been?
That was July 18th of 2009 that I accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior.
There you go.
Praise God.
And then we have Mike Polis, mortgage broker, and Joe Martech, financial advisor, and Pastor Dave, who is trying to keep us all straight. And you're not doing a very good job today,
Dave. I know. But it's very difficult with you, Joe.
Well, when did I promise you a rose garden? You know, I picked dandelions.
Dandelions? My grandmother used to cook those.
Dandelion greens.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I had them as a kid. Our neighbor across the street one day was out picking dandelions. I said, what are you doing? She goes, I'm making dandelion greens. And I said, really? People eat that stuff?
Yeah.
She goes, of course.
Medicinal,
whether it's dandelion or root or collards or spinach, or it's all greens, and they're edible. We ate them. I didn't like them.
Certainly better than liver.
But what? Oh boy, everything's better than liver. That's the bottom of the list.
I tell you how my mother prepared that when we were kids.
Not the way you
She'd
like.
She'd take a little hunk of beef liver, put it in a pan, fry it up for 2 minutes, and put it on your plate and said, enjoy.
Eat it. Yeah,
if you called it foie gras, it would be ten times more.
We had 1/2 pound of liver, 9 pounds of onions,
four quarts
of ketchup.
We never got that.
You know what I remember as a kid, though, and Alan, you probably do too, and Mike, you may not. Did you ever have tongue?
No. It's just so ugly.
I get a lot of it.
You haven't introduced Mike yet.
I remember my mother had this great big tongue, put it on the plate in the middle of the table, and I'm telling you, it was like a foot and a half long.
Oh my God.
And I'm telling you, that was dinner. And
wow.
You know, when we, I don't know how you were raised, but when we were raised, it was called, this is what you will eat. I don't care if you don't like it. This is what you will eat.
I didn't tell you the rest of that story. She put the liver on the plate and said, "You're not getting off the table till you finish it."
Yeah, same.
Well, guess what? I was there till 11 o'clock at night, 5 hours later, till my father came along and said, "All right, get to bed."
I had a neighbor when I had one of my daughters wouldn't eat her peas, and I said, "You're staying up till you eat your peas." So we had this big window on the dining room looking at the neighbor. The neighbor called me at 11 o'clock at night and said, "Joe, let her go to bed."
Embarrassing.
That kid won every argument we ever had.
This could all be construed as child abuse today.
Today it would be.
Oh, it would be. We would have turned them in.
This would not happen in my house.
But I would know, you know, I mean, liver, that's a tough one. And then you find out it really isn't good for you.
Well, at that time they thought it was
They
thought it was very good for you, and it was good full of whatever.
Iron. You know, but you know what was good about it? It was cheap.
Yeah, it was
cheap. Because nobody would eat this stuff.
Yeah, it was cheap.
1-888-221-8990. So Team Martech started off in around 2004 doing radio shows, and the concept was very simple. Joe Martech's a financial advisor, and in order to be what I call a credible professional and a credible financial advisor, clients would ask you questions that you don't know the answer to, and regularly there become questions about mortgages. In fact, I've got 2 pages here or 5 pages in my pocket from Mike Paulus, who's here today, for somebody that he already turned down, but we need to reopen the case, you lucky devil. Vince Rizzino, CPA, about every couple weeks I call Vince up and say, "Vince, I got this." And he says, "Joe, why don't you ever ask me an easy question?"
You never do.
But you know, it's amazing how after 25 or 30 years, something new keeps coming.
I've got something new I want to talk to you about today, and
you're going
to
tell
the audience.
Yeah, okay, good.
I want to talk about it.
And then we have special guest star Alan Love, a retired attorney that happens to be a prosecuting attorney from Wisconsin. So this is a talk show. We're here to answer questions. We're here to help people when it comes especially on mortgages today, getting financing. And I hear, Mike, that they're loosening up. They're getting the qualifications are – the ratios, income to debt, are getting easier.
Yeah, you know what? Little by little, the pendulum's coming back to the middle of the road. It's
have to prove you can afford it, right?
Well, to some degree, because actually, one thing I wanted to talk about today is we have a whole new slew of products, and it's a little bit of the subprime market coming back.
No kidding.
And we actually have loans that are foreign nationals are eligible for. And also we have no ratio or no income verification loans again, but on investment properties only.
Does that sound like a dichotomy? I mean, because it's on investment properties, but you have to prove that the investment property has income.
Well, what they do is for the investment properties, they'll find out what the market rent is for that particular property. And as long as it offsets the payment on it, we're okay. You see, back in 2014, part of the Dodd-Frank Act kicked in where it said that lenders have to verify the borrower's ability to repay the loan. But that only pertained to primary residences and second homes. But for investment properties and for foreign nationals, that law doesn't apply. So we can still do those types of programs with no ratio.
Even with Dodd-Frank in place?
Correct.
Uh-huh. And if the Dodd-Frank ever gets abolished or destroyed, which it should be,
well, I mean, they're talking about dismantling it somewhat, but we haven't had any of the details. But what you had mentioned is some of the new changes that are coming out with Fannie Mae. And Fannie Mae is loosening their guidelines for debt ratios. It was strictly at 45%. That means 45% of your monthly income can go towards all of your monthly mortgage payments and debt payments. It doesn't include things like car insurance or phone bills or anything like that, just strictly debt payments. Now they're going to expand that to about 50% and possibly more if the borrower is well qualified in other areas like good credit, larger down payment, or a lot of assets in the bank.
Well, like I said, it's starting to get better, but there's still you said something that I had not heard. Ability to pay was always the criteria that we used years and years ago. Mm-hmm. Number one, prove to me you can afford it.
Right.
Is that still, or okay. You said with some subprimes, that's not the reality?
Well, I think a lot of the subprime lenders that are in the market now are kind of testing the waters. Where, when these subprime lenders came out a few years ago, they were only doing some, you know, hard to qualify for due to credit reasons, because it was pretty cut and dry. The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, had mentioned, you know, stated that you had to verify that the borrowers had the ability to repay using a debt ratio of 43%.
Right.
But, you know, what they say now is if it's an investment property, it's considered a commercial loan, and commercial loans don't apply to Dodd-Frank. So So they're trying to skirt some of the issues, in my opinion, but so far it hasn't been tested by the CFPB, so they're expanding on these guidelines.
The okay. Yep. Well, that's good to know. Anyway.
I stand corrected.
Oh, Pastor Tom
straightened you out. Pastor Tom straightened me out.
What did he say?
Deuteronomy 14:22.
Deuteronomy.
That tithe represents 10%.
And there it is in black and white.
And there it is, and I stand corrected. I said, show me, and he showed me.
You know, you got to give him credit.
I do.
I mean, it took him a half an hour.
Took him a half hour to find out, but he found it.
I guess, are you preaching Deuteronomy this weekend?
No. No. But I am corrected because I couldn't find it. So, and I always believed it wasn't there.
All right, so let's talk Vince Rosino, CPA. You have a subject.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to talk to you about something called QLAX.
What is that?
QLAX.
That's like XLAX, but not.
No. A QLAX is a qualified longevity annuity.
Go ahead.
These are basically special types of investment vehicles that you can keep inside of your IRAs.
Go ahead.
And 401ks. And the real, what it does is it allows you to avoid RMDs on that portion that's invested in these annuities inside of your IRAs.
Now, what's the qualifications for that? There has to be as I understand these things.
There's a cap. You can only put up to $125,000. It's a percentage of the, and I forget the percentage, but it's up to $125,000 of value
you could put into. But there's a purpose for this.
Yeah, it extends out payment. Really what they're saying is that it's tantamount to the same thing.
Oh, Pastor Tom's going to sneak in on
He's going to be
I've got a question
now.
From someone who came by today, and it was easier for me to tell you than to write it down.
I know. You know,
but I also
writing stuff down.
I also
want to
rub the oil in.
Rub the oil
a little bit. Rubbing it in over here.
Because the reason it took me a half an hour was to find a scripture that you would accept. Because you would not accept that the word tithe meant tenth.
No, because if you show me scripture, I believe it.
Well,
if
you showed me the word tithe.
Yeah, but he
wanted to see it. I wanted to see it in God's word is where I wanted to see it.
But anyway, the question is, a fella came by today and I was talking with him, and he has been diagnosed with cancer. He's taking chemotherapy, and I asked him, I said, well, are you getting any disability or Social Security? My brother-in-law had cancer, colon cancer, and even though he was only 59, he got Social Security payments. And what his question was, he has not applied for it, even though he has cancer. He has not applied for any Social Security benefits, but the reason he hadn't applied for it was because he was afraid that it might interfere or affect his health insurance, and he didn't want to lose his health insurance because I believe he's on the Obamacare system, and he didn't know if by receiving Social Security benefits, if that would, you know, stop his health insurance. Do you have any idea about that?
Well, first, they can't turn you down once you've got it. Number two, there's no pre-existing exclusions under Obamacare, so the answer is no. Third, if he can qualify for disability income, he can probably qualify for Medicaid, which would be technically, in my opinion, better coverage than you can get under Obamacare, because they won't have that $6,000 and $12,000 deductible. So
he's only 59.
I don't care how old he is. The key is this: under the this, don't take this to the bank, but take it close to the bank. Obamacare programs, if you're under age 65, have a deductible that you have to pay of roughly $6,000. Now, it could be a little more, a little less, depending on the person. Now I'm paying for health insurance like Vinny is, and he's gonna pay X number of dollars a month like you are, Tom, but here's what happens. If you're on Medicaid, which means I'm now on welfare, or meaning disability, and the government comes in and offers me health insurance called Medicaid, not Medicare, Medicaid, those rules on Obamacare are over with.
Would he go to the Social Security office to find out all this information?
Yes. And here comes another problem he's got. And now this is just some experience. To get onto Social Security disability and or Medicaid, he's got about a 2-year program. It's almost impossible, so I've ever seen, to get on it immediately.
But yeah, well, the doctors initially gave him 4 to 6 months
to live.
To live. And he's taking chemotherapy, and he, you know, has no income.
Here's his thing. He's thinking that the government is out there to get him, and they're not. Quite honestly, it's the reverse. Okay. It's the reverse. Go into the Social Security office, tell them the truth, and let them apply for Social Security disability for him, and they will help him fill out the paperwork. They'll do everything in their power according to the rules, and they cannot turn him down, but they can make it take a long period of time to get him approved.
It's but not the sooner that, he gets there, the better.
The sooner the better. He should have been applying a long time ago. Because once he gets on Social Security disability, he then qualifies for Medicaid, which now is almost 100% coverage. And I understand a lot of doctors don't like Medicaid, but still he can find them. And his situation, under his health situation, he will not lose the health insurance he's got. But once he moves from Plan A to Medicaid, the Medicaid is superior, and that will take over. So, and I'm giving you my experience. And Vin, you've had experience.
I'll be honest, Joe, I think you know more about that circumstance than I do.
I thought that there was an income limitation that was relatively low to qualify for Medicaid. I mean, I'm thinking $12,000.
He has no income. He right now he's in chemotherapy. He has no income, and he's not on Social Security disability. He's on nothing. He's in trouble financially. Now, he may be borrowing money from people. He may be dipping into savings. He may be, who knows what he's doing. But the man has major problems. And the Social Security system is there to help people in that system. It isn't
actually
just
Medicaid is designed for that exact circumstance. It's,
what he just said is, repeat that.
I said Medicaid was designed for exactly that circumstance.
It's exactly what it's for.
It was for people who are indigent, poor, can't afford it, disabilities, and old people, and basically older people, I should say.
Now, once you're on Medicare, which is age 65, that's a whole different ballgame. Yeah, right. But you also can get Medicare disability prior to age 65.
Yes.
And you can also get a supplement. You can also get an HMO and a PPO. He needs to go to the Social Security office and share the information with them and let them start to guide him. And then what he should be doing is talking to somebody like us that can. Very often in the Social Security Administration, they're there to answer questions. They're not there to give advice.
They're not allowed to.
So, but my experience with them has been extremely good. But you need to know the questions. And very often when I have a client, I will write a list of questions down that they should go with. And on a few occasions, I've gone with them.
I think it would be a prudent idea to find out what the Medicaid income limits are, because if you
no income.
I know, but if you apply for Social Security and your Social Security income exceeds the poverty limits, then you can disqualify.
Your Social Security is not going to.
How do you know what his income was for the last 20 years?
No, but it's called current income. It's not going to be his income.
Yeah, but your Social Security income is going to be based on what you've made over the last several years.
What I'm trying
to
say is Social Security disability is different. It's not regular
Social Security disability isn't. Joe's absolutely right. What that is, Mike, it's really an advance payment on your Social Security.
That has nothing to do with your income.
What they do is, it does have with your income. What they do is they project out what your normal Social Security would be, mm-hmm. and then they, depending on how close you are to that, you can get it early. Essentially, you're getting early
Social Security.
So that means the younger you are, the lower that monthly amount would be.
Exactly. The younger you are, the lower the amount is. If you're a 40-year-old going on Social Security disability,
you might get
$600 or $800 a month.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
If you're a 60-something-year-old doing it, then you might get $1,200.
Well, what is the poverty level then?
Well, it's like $15,000.
Yeah, 15 or 18.
The point I'm trying to say is I have never seen anybody, once they got Social Security disability income, that did not qualify for Medicaid, personally. Now, that doesn't mean I'm 100% on this, but the key is this. You go into the Social Security office, you make an appointment. Let me tell you this, big deal. Make an appointment. Call up, tell them what you want to talk about, make a firm appointment. They will have a person ready for you that is knowledgeable based on the criteria you give them. And then you should have your questions ready, which is 8 or 10 questions, so that they can help you. And they will. They're very, very, very cooperative with that. Anyway.
Yes.
What about medical documentation to back up your...
Well, the first, when you first go to that meeting, this is not, the first meeting is to understand the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's an investigation. So you can bring everything you want. That's not going to work.
Okay. Yeah, they want to prove it the same day.
There's no way. Then they're going to come back, and then they are going to go to the doctors. They are going to get you to sign paperwork to allow doctors to release all this information, and all that takes a period of time. Everybody I know personally that's ever applied for disability income, it took about a 2-year period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, some people were so desperately disabled it was scary, but this is the system. Yeah. I don't like the system. But understand,
But the good news is, Joe, they will pay you back to the date that you applied.
Yep.
So if it takes 2 years, they'll give you a retro payment back to the date that you made the application. So you don't lose money. You got to fund yourself for the period of time.
I mean, literally, I just to give you not exactly a parallel, but husband and wife get divorced, 3 children, joint custody. But the kids are primarily custody with the mother. The father gets on disability income. The mother now gets a check for $1,500 a month for those children, and she got 6 months back pay for those children.
Mm-hmm.
Key was that once he qualifies, the system assists those children. And if you had 5 or 6 kids, I mean, it can be a substantial amount of money.
Mm,
three kids is a pretty good chunk.
I have some information here that would be helpful. Besides making an appointment and going to Social Security, I would advise going to the Social Security website. There is much, much information there that might be helpful before the appointment. And that website is www.ssa, that's samsamalpha.gov.
Now, let me just understand what you're saying. And I understand that you're intelligent and Vince is intelligent, but I'm dumb as a stump. So I have gone on that site. It is the most complicated site I've ever seen in my life. Trying to understand and get through the stuff, it's difficult. It's difficult. I'm not saying not to go on, but all I'm trying to say is my experience one-on-one has been directly with the Social Security office, and the people there have been extremely cooperative. Extremely cooperative. First step, go on the site, look on the SS site. But the main thing is don't pass go. Go into the office and start the procedure now. Because even after you go on the site, you still need to go in the office and make the application.
Well, one of the things I was referring to on the site, they give you tips as far as what to have when you come into the Social Security office. They, depending on the situation, can give you guidance as to qualifications. So if you're not qualified for something, there's no reason to go. But as you said, Joe, in this case, it's obvious that there's qualifications.
But on the other hand, here's what happens. Interpretation of government paraphernalia. I mean, the government doesn't do anything that takes 10 words. They make 1,000 words out of 10 words. My experiences with these sites have been extremely difficult, whereas personal one-on-one, hey, I make this appointment, I go in, the Social Security person says, hey, according to what you told me, you don't qualify. Bam, it's done, you're out the door. You just give them the facts.
Yeah.
If they come up and they say, yes, you need to make application, now it's gonna take a period of time. But that's the system. You're not gonna change the system. So anyway, this is a whole new topic. This isn't something that we come into, but only because somebody called in today. But a lot of people are afraid of, quote, Social Security or of the Internal Revenue. And I will tell you, my experiences with both agencies in the last 5 years have been extremely positive with helpful people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the old 30 years ago IRS intimidating people, those days are gone. They've been extremely helpful trying to keep people afloat so that they didn't commit suicide and they didn't go into major traumas. They've been very good. Yeah. Now again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen quickly, but you need to start the system and have some faith. And I've had people, I had to go with them. They were scared to death to the point that they'd need to be on Prozac in order to walk in the door. So I would go with them just to hold their hand, you know, because they're scared, because intimidation, like an attorney. Alan, a lot of people automatically are intimidated when a person is an attorney that has intimidating powers. You know, you're going to talk to the President of the United States and you're not going to be intimidated? Forget it. Of course you are. Position power can be intimidating. So it doesn't mean you're not out there to help them, but a lot of people have a hard time getting past that intimidation factor. It's like me talking to Mike Paulus. He intimidates me all the time.
Not me, Joe.
I can't
intimidate anybody.
1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. So let me ask you, Vin, so you're starting to tithe more? Is that what Pastor Tom said?
No, what he's saying is that, although, you know, I just looked, I don't know what Bible this is, but I looked up Deuteronomy 14:22. It doesn't say anything about 10% here, but his Bible showed it, so I'll take him for
it. Now, you're going to go have, you know, but that could be the church of what's happening now, Bible.
I don't know.
when you tithe, does it matter that you tithe to one particular church? Can you tithe towards any charity? Is there any particular rule for that?
Now, from my perspective as a pastor, any pastor of any church would love to have his people or her people tithe the entire 10% to their congregation, and many do, and I did for many years.
Yes.
In my current situation, as a founding bishop of the group that we are in, half of my tithe goes to the denomination, and half then I divide out part to the church we planted, and then to other resources that we've been connected with. You know, we've been giving for years. So,
but it adds up to 10%.
I don't believe it. Ask God, because you know He's the one that made the requirement. So we often say, "Okay, Lord, how do you want us to divide this up?"
Okay, so if He doesn't talk to you,
well, then we do it as we think so, and if it doesn't look good, then we back up and pray some more.
And a part of what seriously, I read in the Bible was it should be cheerful giving.
Cheerful, yes, definitely.
And you know that this is something that you're not putting a strain on the body and the family, that you're doing this out of a good purpose. So that's why I'm when I was fighting with Pastor Tom and you, trying to do the right thing when a person is nervous and worried that if I don't tithe, I'm going straight to hell tomorrow. You know, I don't like to see that kind of pressure put on somebody.
And it shouldn't be that way.
I know.
It shouldn't be that. If that comes from man, not from God.
That's my point.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, I'm not saying all pastors, but there have been a few that have been a bit rough on their people when it comes to tithing.
Yeah. I know. I've met some of them.
Anyway, so we got into this heated discussion, meaning Pastor Tom, Pastor Dave, Vince Rosino, Joe Martek, and then we threw Alan Love Attorney into it, and then poor Mike Paulus walked in right at the end of it saying, "What in the world's going on?"
Well, again, I thought this was a financial show.
Right?
Well, right, when you were saying giving 10%, I thought you were talking about the IRS.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know what? If we could get it down to 10%, you'd be doing good.
Listen to that commercial on TV, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they forgot the payroll taxes. We don't count those, right? 1-888-221-8990. So when we started doing the shows back in 2004, it was Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. It was Joe Martek, financial advisor, and Greg Fasula, attorney. And the concept, again, back because of Hurricane Andrew, it put a whole bunch of insurance companies out of business and caused major havoc in Florida. So insurance became a big topic. And having an independent that didn't represent one company but represented the client and had a whole bunch of companies. And in my not too humble opinion, Dan is the premier independent insurance agent on the Treasure Coast by now. He's got pushing 100 companies under his umbrella and 38 years in business. That makes him pretty strong. So he was a critical member. Greg Fasula, probably the only attorney in the whole world I'd like to have as a next door neighbor. Well, maybe Alan, but not really even Alan. Alan's too tough. Anyway, Greg, his thing is wills and trust, estate planning, and that's what I needed, because I talked to new clients, new prospects, that I'd like them to get the cart and the horse in the proper order, and having a will and a trust, or understanding what they need to do, was important. And then having it done properly, because I get these calls from people, "Well, Joe, we went to Office Depot and we got this will. Do you think that'll work?" And I said, number one, I'm not an attorney, but let me just tell you, Florida law is different than other states, And a generic piece of paper might work, but it may not, because when it gets tested in court, if the system is not documented according to Florida law, it could be a problem. Hmm. So people are trying constantly not to pay an attorney, but it will. Greg was sitting here, he'd want to kill me, but you should be looking at under a simple normal will under $500, and that would cost, including a power of attorney, the health care surrogate, the living will, the documents that are necessary to protect your family. Now, Greg would kick me right now onto the table for using a dollar figure, because some wills are more complicated than others. Like Pastor Tom, here comes a complicated guy.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Simple question.
Simple question.
We had a caller that just called. He didn't want to get on the air. He has a son that's ill and disabled, and he wants to know, his son lives in his house. He's an adult.
Right.
Won't take his medication. He had to have him
whatever,
taken, Baker acted or whatever. I don't know if that he went that far, but anyway, his question is, how can he apply to get benefits for his son? Can he do that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, he can do that.
Social Security. Here's what happens, and I've seen this happen, and Vince, you and I both have seen, where we have a special needs child, an adult special needs child, that was in a car accident or something, and that child is not competent enough to take care of themselves. They need somebody to take care of. So very often the parent keeps this child. This child could be 40 years old. That child can qualify for Social Security disability income, period. That's just all there is to it. Now, the procedure, the parent is going to have to be the one on the point, putting it together, making that child do what needs to be done. But most of the time, it needs doctor's verifications as your documentation to come up. Why does this person qualify? It has to. You have to prove it. It's no different than proving that you can afford a mortgage. You've got to prove that you've got the job, and there's documentation.
Yeah, and we have mortgages also that where the parent can apply for a mortgage and for a disabled child and call that a primary residence, so they can get all the benefits of a lower interest rate, a lower down payment. So there's mortgage programs out for there for that too.
Most of the things out there, and most people are just intimidated automatically when they think that the government is not there to help them, and none of us are big government people, but the reality is there are some good things out there that our system works, and the Social Security system does have some things that help a lot of people that need help. Now, there's people that take advantage of it. There's people that lie, cheat, and steal. But when I talk about somebody that has a special needs child that's living at home, there are dollar benefits for them. No doubt about it. I made the fatal mistake one time of being the trustee on a special needs trust. Boy, I'll never do that again. That was interesting, because when you got a special needs trust and you're getting Social Security disability, let's say you're getting $1,000 a month, that's for food, shelter, clothing. And if you make any other money, you lose your Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm.
They take it away from you. So all of a sudden, this kid gets a $50,000 settlement in a car accident. Can't have the money. Not for food, shelter, clothing, any of the things, Social Security. What can you use it for? Fun.
Really?
Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to take a cruise. Can I use it for that? Oh, yeah. But you can't use it for food, shelter, or clothing. But it's stupid rules. But the bottom line is, and then what happens, the government says that $50,000, that person dies, any of that money left over goes back to the government. Well, got to pay them back for the Social Security disability. So there's a lot of rules that we are not going to get into big time here, but the key thing, rather than talking to me or to Dave or Vince, Social Security Administration is the way to go. And if you go on the Gov site, there's a lot of information on there, a ton of it that might get you started and might help you with the questions.
Absolutely. But boy, it's background before you go see the person, because you might ask a couple of questions because you looked at the site. I had a personal incident where I went on the site before I went to the Social Security Administration, and it gave me a couple of questions to ask that were very helpful to me.
The key thing is this: there's a lot of resources out there, and one of the things our group does is try to help people. And this is just one of those areas. And we've got people what did I say? Not including Alan's 150 years of experience. We've got about 200 years cumulatively of experience in our group. Plus, Alan now is a special contributor. Brings in another 40 or so years of good experience. So, and Alan, he's all, you're first hand on what the government can do to help people that have disabilities.
Yeah, I worked for the government in Milwaukee. So
little minor clue.
Yes. Can we maybe change the subject a little bit? I have a question for Mike.
Do it.
Mike, the Federal Reserve seems to be on a path now of raising interest rates over time.
Yeah, but I think they're more concerned about clearing their books right now.
Right, but do you foresee any problems coming in the one of the housing areas for that?
No, I don't. Well,
it won't hurt high-end housing, but what about the lower end?
It's a very strange market, Alan, because the last two times that the Fed increased the rates, the mortgage rates actually decreased.
Dichotomy, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think a bigger problem is when the Fed tries to release some of its assets. I think that could drive up rates more so than the Fed actually increasing
Janet
rates.
Janet Yellen said yesterday, the Federal Reserve Chairman, that they are going to do that.
Yeah, and they have $4.5 trillion worth of bonds that they have to sell off. Now, that's going to affect the market at some point.
You see, what happens is this. This is called like highly technical stuff that 98% of the people on Earth, 99%, don't have a clue what we're talking about, because the Federal Reserve dances to a whole different drummer than anything we understand. But historically, when interest rates go up, the rates on treasuries go up, and then the mortgage rates go up.
Correct.
This time, didn't happen.
No.
Only because of this other side effect, which is what she's trying to eliminate. And you know,
I think they're going to have to choose one or the other. I don't think they're going to be able to raise rates and sell off the bonds. I just think that it's going to be a real fun dance to watch.
But
isn't it almost a prerequisite, though, Mike, by virtue of raising rates and they're going to sell off the bonds? Wouldn't that assist them in that regard? Because You're offering higher rates for those bonds. They're not going to issue them for the same thing. When you sell off
so many of them, they have to sell them off at a discount. And when you're selling them off at a discount, it's going to raise
depends
the yield.
But don't they also?
$4.5 trillion with a D.
But there's also, these are existing bonds with existing coupon rates. You don't change the coupon rate when you sell them.
No, but you change the price.
Yeah. Change the price.
Yeah, I'm saying they can offer them. Here comes discount. Yeah, they'll give them that higher yield in order to make them attractive. Even if they have to discount.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's my point. Yes, the rates can go up, but now, they have to accommodate it. It can help them because they can just drop the price.
99.99% of the people listening to this show don't even care what we're talking about, including me. Because
the long and short is, the question was, how is this going to affect the real estate market? And I believe that, you know, there's the supply and demand is going to affect the real estate industry. There's very few product there. There's not a whole lot of inventory out there for real estate, and that's what's affecting the driving up the prices. Not so much the interest rates. The interest rates are still great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what's it going to go from 4% to 4.25%? I mean, historically, interest rates are 8%. So this is a phenomenal time to buy because of mortgage interest rates, and I don't think that are going to influence the market that much.
The only thing that might change, Mike, is the average earning power of the people that are buying these houses.
Yeah, because earnings have not gone up. The wages have not gone up. And as prices go up and as interest rates slowly increase, it is going to affect people's ability to qualify for a mortgage.
Now, technically.
But that's why Fannie Mae is increasing the debt ratio.
Well, you know, historically, when you get full employment, which supposedly we're pushing, and I say supposedly because the way the government calculates employment and the way most of us calculate employment, there's a bit of a disparity there. That when everybody is working, it's an example. 3-4 years ago, I ran an ad on Craigslist for an assistant, and I got 150 resumes in 2 hours. Today, I do it, I get 3. The point is, most people today that want to work are working. And a lot of people are coming back into the marketplace to work. which is creating a different anomaly. It's not becoming the same ratio.
But the fallacy is, Joe, that what's the jobs that they're getting? They may have employment, but at what levels? So you were substituting a $60,000 a year job for a $20,000 a year job? Yeah, they're jobs.
Well, it was interesting, the latest jobs report last week, and the people who are being hired are Latinos, you know, minority workers and younger folks, because people who have skills have already been hired.
They've been hired.
Yeah, and they make less.
Right, and they make less, and that's what's keeping the wages down.
Well, the other side of the coin is, and this is nothing new, entry level has always been entry level. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're 18 years old, even though we want to start at the top of the field and work our way down, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You start at the bottom and have to work your way up.
There are some people out there who want to do that.
I'm one of those. I still want to.
Well, it's not at the top that work their way down, right?
That's right. Like, I want to start at pay me $1 million the first year and trust me.
I can't be born 80 years old and then work my way backwards.
There you go. 1-888-221. Wait a minute. That's the wrong number. I'm reading the wrong sign. It's 888-221-8990.
Yes, sir.
No wonder it didn't look right.
What were you reading?
We're close.
Well, the 221-1100 is a local number.
That's a local number,
but
right.
Skip the local number.
Just, well, if you're in the Bahamas, you can't do that. It's going to cost you a lot of money.
Lots of money. 1-888-221-8990. Does he look Italian to you?
No.
Yeah, but you know.
But I ate a lot of Italian food.
Ate a lot of Italian food
in Italy.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Scusi.
Scusi. Yes. When you're getting through the crowd, that's what you call.
Yeah. Prego.
You've always said that the main purpose of the show is to educate, so let's keep it simple. When interest rates rise, bond prices go down.
That's true.
And the reverse is true. And I want to go back to what you were talking about, that annuity inside an IRA.
Yes.
You mentioned three letters that I don't understand.
Yeah, QLAC. Q for qualified.
What is RMD?
Oh, okay. Those are called required minimum distributions. Now, what are they? This is built into the tax law. What it does is it essentially forces all those people who save money into 401ks and IRAs, when they reach 70 and a half years of age, that they must begin to withdraw the funds. Whether they want to or not. It's a forced withdrawal, and it's based on a table which goes by your age at the time you start withdrawing it. So 70 and a half, usually it's somewhere around 87 years is what they figure you're going to live to.
150,
let's say it's 17 years and make it easy. You know, you have $170,000 in your 401k and you're 70 and a half. They may make you take $10,000 a year for the next 17 years.
Well, that's not exactly the system. The way it works today, each year you start at 70 and a half, it's just a hair under 4%. Then each year after that, it goes up every single year until when you're 90, you have to take out 10%.
Well, if you're taking it out now at 70 and a half, there's a table.
Yeah.
If you start at 85, it's different. If you start at 90, it's different.
But if you don't start at 70 and a half,
you're messed up anyway because you have to start at
70. You have to. So what the government basically says this, they have a system for you to take the money because they want to get their money, and they have a system set up. And by the way, if a trustee, let's call them whoever's holding your IRA, they have a responsibility to have you take your RMD every year. You can turn it down, but you're now into what could be as much as a 50% penalty. Am I right?
Oh yeah. Well, it's an excise tax, Joe. It's a really onerous.
The biggest penalty, I think,
penalty
in the code. Yeah.
But here's the thing, Alan. So they use the same example. So you have $170,000 and you have to take $10,000 a year because that's the way it's written. Okay, whatever the number is, give or take what Joe is saying, it's approximate. What happens if you took $125,000 of the $170,000 and invested it into an immediate annuity?
Right.
An immediate annuity. So basically, immediate annuity is you pay a fixed sum now today and it guarantees you a payout over time.
I call it a pension.
Yeah,
you're not. You're buying a pension.
Well, you could subtract that $125,000 off the $170,000. So now your RMD, or required distribution, would come off the differential between the $125,000 and the $170,000. Okay, so it would be like $55,000 then, which would then be spread over 17 years. Because the theory is you're getting it one way or the other.
Exactly.
The theory, you're getting it through that qualified QLAC, and you're also getting it through RMDs.
But that's the difference, though. The QLAC, to take that 125 and have an immediate annuity, it wouldn't be possible then to have that 125 go into like a variable type annuity.
No, they're specifically exempt. So, you cannot do it.
So the investment part of the money would be much less than the guaranteed income part of the money. But that's great for people that want to guarantee that income.
Literally, what happens when all immediate annuities that are not variable, that are fixed, they plug in three or four different things: your age, your sex, the then current interest rate, and they now say this is what your check is going to be every month for the rest of your life, and that check will not change. It won't go up, won't go down, it's fixed. So you can take IRA money and put it into there. If you took all your IRA money and put it in, you no longer have an RMD.
If you put it all in, that's right. Wouldn't be an RMD.
You're now
you would then revert to that stream of income that you set up, that periodic fixed
that's
income.
That's about it. So literally there's some wrinkles that you can use, but 90% of the people, I think, and when people say to me today, Joe, what about this immediate annuity? And I said, well, one of the problems I have today with people taking an immediate annuity is the then current interest rate. So let's say the then current interest rate today is 1% or 2%. Well, maybe 2 years from now, it'll be 3% or 4%. Then you plug in a different factor. Instead of getting, say, $1,000 a month, you might be getting $2,000 a month just by waiting 3 or 4 years. So it's not an easy system to gauge, but we all know interest rates, highly unlikely they're going to go down from where we are today. Over a period of the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, almost everybody, in fact, everybody sitting here is expecting them to go up 1 or 2% at least.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they will depends on the variables on the economy and politics and the world situation and et cetera,
oil
et cetera.
Prices.
There's all kinds of stuff that gets plugged into it. But the immediate annuity, it does eliminate all kinds of thinking because I now have a pension and we know what it's going to be forever. But if you live to be 100 years old, you might, and you know what's going and your marbles aren't gone, you might be a little upset because your cost of living is going to go up in the next 20 years and that check stays the same. So
there's trade-offs.
There's trade-offs.
But one thing that I think is important to bring out is the fact that the markets are unpredictable. Nobody can predict what's going to happen. But when you have a fixed annuity, you're protected even if the insurance company that started that annuity goes out of business.
The key thing is this. You have a contract. That contract is as good as gold, in my opinion, period. Now, according to compliance people, I'm supposed to say you have to know the claims paying ability, but what Alan is alluding to, I'm not supposed to talk about under licensing in Florida. Can you believe that? The Florida Guarantee Fund, we're not supposed to talk about.
All right, then
you can talk about it, but I can't.
Okay.
But it's an interesting scenario, is it not?
Right. I don't have to talk about it. All I'm saying is there is a way that the money is guaranteed that you don't have to be concerned.
The object of different types of investments, you know, and I talk about this, you know, it's called, gee, what if I could get a 5 or 6% guaranteed income on my money, and that income couldn't go down, but it could go up, and if I earn more than 5 or 6%. That's what it's worth. This is called an insured investment. The insurance company comes in and says, hey, I'm going to protect you in case the market goes down. But on the other hand, if the market does nothing but go up, I'm the happiest camper in the world. Like right now, this year, the S&P 500 is up, what?
About 12%.
Okay. The NASDAQ 100 is up around 14 or 15. And this is not even a whole year. This is 7 months into the year. Now, does that mean it's going to continue to go up? Who knows? Odds are decent it won't keep going up forever. Back in the 90s, we had a whole slew of 20 and 25% years. Those were magnificent. You can't count on this stuff. But there are certain types of investments that once you have earned this kind of money, can lock it in. And there becomes what you have. You know, Alan, you and I talk about it. Vince, we look at an individual person. How old are you? What's your goal? How much time have you got? How can we make things work for you with your best advantage with the least amount of risk? And then, what's the magic words in the industry? Your risk tolerance. If I'm as young as Mike Polis, I'm willing to risk everything because I'm going to work for 30 more years.
I'm hoping not.
But Vince,
I am putting some money away.
Vince retired 2 years ago, but he doesn't know it yet.
Will you tell my bank that?
Yeah, right. The key is risk tolerance, and then your objective, and then your time frames. All these Absolutely. Things have to get plugged in.
It's called suitability, Joe. Suitability. And it's analyzing a person's goals, and you do all these things up front when you suggest investments to them. And back to my days when I used to be an investment rep, I remember all those things. And you could actually be liable, because if somebody, you put them in a wrong investment that they're not suitable for and they lose money, they might be coming after you.
I had a case when Vince says that I went out to see actually, he was a small client of mine, but he never told me everything he had. He kind of didn't want me to know. Mm-hmm. But he went to see him this one day, and he goes out and he says, Joe, I bought this thing for $80,000 by XYZ broker, and it's worth $10,000 today. And he said, what do you think? And I says, well, you sure screwed up, or somebody did. He showed it to me, and I said, you don't qualify for that. He said, what are you talking about? I said, you do not qualify for this, because under the rules that are set up, you had to be a qualified investor, and a qualified investor has to have a net worth of $1 million or $250,000 worth of income and experience. You have to have criteria to be a qualified investor to get into certain types of investments. And I said, you're not one of them. He said, really? And I said, yeah, we can probably get your money back. He said, you're kidding. And I said, no. Let's get on the phone right now, and I'll call the company, and let's see what happens. In 10 minutes, they settled with him. They gave him $50,000 back and let him keep the stock to get him to write off and say he wasn't going to sue him. The key was, the broker that sold him was sold them and falsified the paperwork that made him a qualified investor, and he was not. The manager at that office, that guy was gone. He's out of the business. They were liable. The company was, the broker-dealer was liable. So that manager's job was to protect the broker-dealer the best they could, so they settled with him. And I tell you, it's the quickest one I've ever had, but it was clearly the man was not suited for that investment. There was fraud. So the broker-dealer wants to get rid of that guy as fast as humanly possible, and they did. And that happens more often than people know, that they are sold something they should never have bought. Yeah. When you have a securities license, now, I'm not talking just a state insurance license, a securities license. Normally, you have the protection behind you of the SIPC, which, Alan, you alluded to, Securities Insurance Protection, which is there up to $1 million for fraud. And you also have FINRA, a regulatory agency, and the SEC, which oversees all of them, the Securities and Exchange Commission. They don't make it easy on people like me if we do something that's not in the client's best interest. And what Vince was going into was suitability, big time, suitability.
Yeah. Well, I had a situation once that it's a two-way street. I had a situation where I had to testify at a hearing, and what I testified is the client didn't tell me the truth.
Well, that happens.
And the client sued but lost the case because of basically my testimony.
Well, the key is this. If you're doing your job as an agent, you ask the client the questions, and then you fill out the forms. One of the questions is, have you ever bought stock? Yes. How long ago did you buy stock? Well, first time was 25 years ago. Okay, so you know how stock works. Yeah, have you ever bought bonds? Yeah, I bought bonds. How long ago? 10 years ago. Have you ever bought? So you fill out this informational form. Now the client comes back and says, hey, I didn't know what I was doing. This guy took advantage of me and sold me stock, and I had no idea what stock was. Wait a minute. You signed a form that says you bought stock before, that you knew what you were doing. So, like you're saying, Alan, there's always a two-sided street. You know, a person buys an investment, and that investment goes sour. Nobody likes that. You don't like it as the sales rep, and they don't like it as the investor. But it does happen. Sometimes you take risk. Marijuana stocks today, you know, that's a big thing. and I know people are just clamoring like crazy. Is it going to work? When I have to do that with Mike, when they do that, they have to sign a form that says, I never talked to them. They don't even know who I am. This was all their idea. It was not my idea. I don't even know what street they live on. I'm kidding.
And I don't even know what marijuana stocks are.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I know we can't. Any income derived from that, I can't use to qualify. So there are rules about that.
Isn't that weird? not even medical marijuana?
No.
Isn't that wild? So the key is this. There are certain things that people have to disclose if the broker, the agent, is doing his job correctly. He's asking these questions, and the client is now signing a form saying he's been informed. And then what happened with you, Alan? The client lied to you, right?
Right. It's an ongoing battle, Joe. It's the same thing in my profession. It's in the battle of the client's knowledge of the circumstances and what you're telling him to do. In my case, I mean, I have to get agreement from clients. If they take positions that I don't necessarily agree with, I have to tell them, you need support for this. You understand the risks involved in taking this. Yes, you have a legitimate purpose, more than 60% probability that you'll succeed on audit, but there's no guarantees, and they need to sign off on that.
Yeah, and when you sign your name on that piece of paper, you're stuck, too,
yeah,
as
absolutely,
a CPA.
Because you're preparing the return. We're obligated. Obviously, we cannot put down on a form, no matter what the client says, anything that's black. I mean, if it's clearly...
Yeah, if they're lying.
They're lying, or flat as it's a bad... It's a bad deduction, but they insist on it. No, we turn them away.
I had a guy up north. He had two primary residents.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine that?
Oh, my God.
Like, and his
like
accountant
being a Christian
says,
and having two wives.
You can't have two primary residents. Yes, I can.
There's a big difference between two words, probable and guaranteed.
That's right.
Monster. 1-888-221-8990. Well, we didn't get many calls today because we kind of rambled on some weird subjects, but we had a good time.
We touched on a lot of points I think people are interested in.
Let me just tell you this, folks, in a bit. Any questions you have to do with Social Security disability, Medicaid, call, make an appointment with the Social Security Administration, go see them.
Yep.
Now, when I make an appointment, you may sit there for 3 hours if you don't make an appointment.
Oh, yeah. I don't recommend you go there without an appointment.
Oh, boy.
You'll be there for a while.
Just go make it and sit down, and these people are very, very, very cooperative, and they're there to help.
Unless you happen to pick a very rainy day when nobody wants to go out.
Then you can walk in and sit,
right.
And it's dry.
Yeah.
My experience with them was very good.
Yeah. Same thing. I've had, in the last 2-3 years, I've had nothing but good experiences with the IRS and with Social Security. Been very, very good. And Medicare is the same thing. Social Security, Medicare, same thing. I have people call me every once in a while asking me questions, and I said, hey, easy thing to do. And honestly, people are scared to tell the truth. I am sometimes stunned by that.
Well, I think that they're just afraid to say the wrong thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what's the old thing? The truth will set you free. But most of the people that work in the administration, hey, if they say, no, that's a bad answer, they're not writing stuff down, they're not going, go back and correct your forms. You got to do certain things. But if you have something you're trying to hide, the odds are good you're going to get caught anyway. 1-888-221-8990. We're winding down. We're supposed to say goodbye because Pastor Dave is waving, says, get out of here, guys.
He's got the cars waving.
He's got things to do.
Adios, friend, guys.
Being friendly.
Until next week. Thank you.
God bless.
Yes, God bless you.
God bless.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program. The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.